Thanks for tuning in to Backseat's Musical Podcast. Listen, if you like what you hear, be sure to subscribe to it, like it, share it with everyone you know, and if you leave a big fat review, that would be awesome too. Also, check out Instagram, TikTok, and Facebook for regular updates on what's coming up next on future episodes. Today, we're brought to you by Metro Chrysler Dodge Jeep Ram in Chicopee. Visit Metro's state-of-the-art dealership right next to BJ's and Big Y on Memorial Drive, or visit MetroJeep.com and drive home in your new Chrysler Dodge Jeep Ram today.
What is it?
It's Backseat's Musical Podcast.
Resistance is useless.
Over the course of time, there are certain musical genres that seem to enjoy the experience of a revival or a rejuvenation. Things come and go, and then they come back again. The reason they do this is because some of those musical genres are great and deserve a comeback. Others are better off being forgotten, but not all of them. Ska, for example, would be one of those genres that deserves to be rediscovered again every couple of years, whereas polkas, waltzes, and tuba solos have yet to worm their way back into being cool again. In the late 1970s, for example, the two-tone ska bands of the UK, like The Specials, Madness, and The English Beat, kicked off a revival of Jamaican ska and transformed it into something all their own. Eventually, some of that music started to make its way to the United States in little bits and pieces, like you probably weren't going to hear Madness outside of MTV, and you certainly weren't going to find The English Beat unless you heard it on a John Hughes film soundtrack. But like every good genre of music, once something reaches a different shore, it often melds into something else, oftentimes overlapping with whatever might be going on at the time that it hits. In the case of American ska, the music would quickly ally itself with American punk and new wave. Suddenly, both sides of the fence would meet somewhere in the middle to create something called ska core or ska punk, whichever one is fine. And then you had stuff that was somewhere in the middle of all that. Bands like Operation Ivy, The Toasters, Bim Scala Bim, and Fishbone would reintroduce ska to a slightly broader audience. But then you had Rancid, Sublime, and No Doubt that would push that audience a little bit further during the 1990s. Suddenly you had ska becoming mainstream with bands like The Cherry Pop and Daddies, Real Big Fish, and several others. But then you also had the Mighty Mighty Bosstones. This was a band out of Boston that bridged the gap of American ska for an incredible 39 years, releasing 11 records and a bunch of singles, including the 1997 international hits The Impression That I Get and The Rascal King. The Mighty Mighty Bosstones were the real deal, and the lead singer of that band was the great Dickie Barrett. Interestingly enough, if Dickie were just the single of a platinum-selling band, that would be one thing. But Dickie has done a whole lot more than that over the last 39 years. He spent a number of years in radio. He's acted in a bunch of films. And up until 2022, he was the announcer for the Jimmy Kimmel Show for nearly 20 years. Dickie Barrett is now involved with a brand new band that includes former members of The Offspring and Smash Mouth. The name of that band is called The Defiant, and their self-titled debut album, which was released last October, is fantastic. This is my conversation with Dickie Barrett from the Mighty Mighty Bosstones and The Defiant on Backseat's Musical Podcast. Here's the thing. I don't often get a chance to interview guys around our age who grew up 30 miles from my hometown, who also grew up on two-tone records. So I know there's a few of us out there, but it's always great to have someone who I feel like we're like a part of the tribe.
Okay. What's your hometown?
So my hometown is Rehoboth, Mass, between like Attleboro and Taunton, like 10 minutes out of Providence.
My father was from Providence. I grew up in Norwood. Very familiar.
Yeah.
You're close to Foxborough.
Practically down the street. So,
and what were you born?
I was born in 66.
66. So I was a senior and you were a sophomore.
Yes.
And did you go to Rehoboth High School?
I went Dighton Rehoboth High School.
Okay.
And you said Norwood.
I went to Norwood High School. Yes. I tried to go to Severian Brothers High School.
Yep.
And they were only able to put up with me for a year. So it was back to public schools for me.
Yeah. Hey, we got to talk about the new album from The Defiant. You know, if we're being honest, Dickie, this is such a great record, and that should come as no surprise to anyone who, you know, knows who was involved in this. I mean, this band that you've put together is phenomenal. I mean, just bursting with talent. Everyone from Pete Parada from The Offspring, Greg Camp from Smash Mouth. And tell me about putting this band together for the first time. It just had to be just a thrill.
It's a thrill hearing you talk about the record like that, especially since you're a homeboy. And I'm very excited. Please go back to Rehoboth and spread the word. It was just an idea I had where I, you know, had some song ideas and some inklings and some notions. And I call, and if you've been doing music for as long as I've been doing it, you cross paths with and run into very talented people and you say, oh, we should work together someday. And that never really happens. But this time I called Greg and I said, hey, do you want to try our hand at working together and writing some songs? And he said, that sounds good. And we agreed that if it was horrible, then we would quietly walk away from it and never speak of it. But it wasn't, it was good. And then at that point, Pete Parada became available. So I said, hey, this guy is an absolute beast on the drums. These songs deserve exceptional drumming. Let's be so narcissistic as to think that he would work with us. And we called him and Pete said, I'm all in. And it turned, you know, the songwriting completely up a notch. And then we said, well, Greg said, you know, my friend Joey would like to be involved. And I said, my friend Johnny would probably be great on the bass. Johnny's from New Hampshire and was the Street Dogs were a Boston band. And it just snowballed and escalated and just kept the momentum was exceptional and the product. And I hate to use the word product, that sounded horrible, but the song, the album came out great.
Yeah, it did. I think the thing that's so cool about it is it sounds like everybody involved brought something to the table. I mean, you're hearing the Boss Tones, you're hearing Offspring, you're certainly hearing some Smash Mouth and a lot of other stuff too. But what's really cool is it doesn't sound like it's an unfocused album at all. And oftentimes when you got all these different things coming together, it sounds like it loses its way. But I mean, this one absolutely doesn't. Really, really well done.
Well, you're a little bit younger than me, but when I first fell in love with albums was that sweet, sweet spot when like 1978 to like 1983 of records that, you know, like The Clash or you know, the Elvis Costello albums. Joe Jackson was making insane, really good albums at that time. And they were cohesive. They were thoughtful. They had energy. And, you know, think of like The Pretenders or even that the ska music that I love so much. Yeah. Specials, Madness, English Feet. You know, so that's the kind of record we wanted to make. And I think people probably make songs now, and I'm not of that school, and maybe I've aged out of the game, but I like an album. I like it to have a hard cover. I like something to look at while you're listening to these songs. And I like to think that the person thought of the songs, you know, all of the songs together.
Yeah.
Not there's this idea, then there's this idea over here.
I think that's true of people in our generation where, you know, like the album meant something, not just singles or anything like that, but like it, when you've got the album in front of you, there's something magical about that moment. And I hear that with you guys. I mean, you know, clearly there's just so much coming in and out of the songs with the inspiration of it, but it still sounds like a focused record, which is really amazing to me.
Thank you.
Yeah.
I'm so glad I called you today.
I'm glad you did too. I do want to talk about Greg Camp here for a second, because I think he's like one of these guys who is like a really unsung songwriter. I mean, this is a guy that has written freaking hits and big ones. I mean, you know, you can say like, you know, All Star got played to death, but it's still a freaking hit. And, you know, I just think he's one of those really underappreciated songwriters.
That song, you know, those songs that Greg wrote, you know, are overplayed for a reason. They were really, really well written, really thought out, and, you know, perfect for its time and goes even further. I think that we're perfectly clear saying that he's definitely underrated as a songwriter. He's masterful at writing songs, and some of the stuff is so catchy that it'll give you cavities. He's he'll go down in history as one of the greatest, 1990s songwriters. And he's in that. And he writes to this day, he works with, huge artists and helps them craft their songs and helps people write songs. And he's a sought after guy to collaborate with. And the fact that he even picked up the phone when I called him was amazing to me. So,
but the songs on this record are kind of the same. I mean, when I heard, Dead Language, I thought, man, it's such a great track. And there's a number of them on the record that I really, really like, but the one that kind of jumped out at me was, Where Did Lady Liberty Go? And I think the lyrics of that song are unbelievable. That line of, keep your eyes on the shepherd and not the sheep. I thought, wow, that's a really cool line. And when how poignant that one really is.
Thank you very much. Now it's time to talk about how great I am.
Forget everybody else here for a second. This is your time.
I'll share the spotlight, but yes, I did write Where Did Lady Liberty Go? I was writing a song. I was trying to write a Pogues-like song and just sort of an overview of everything that had gone on in the last few years, regarding the pandemic and all that we had experienced, and not to make anything that was, preachy or, took a side or create more division. It was sort of these are the facts and these are the things as I saw them, and just laid them out that way. And so, and tried to be catchy and tried to be clever. And oftentimes I'll do that and I end up filling the trash can with clever.
Yeah.
And so this time I felt comfortable, and then sent it to Greg. And I said, this was an idea I had that was, inspired by the classic Pogue songs of yesteryear. And he said, this is great. And punched it up and took it to town.
You had mentioned, your love of two-tone ska, the Specials and Madness and English Beat. I've always loved those albums and loved that music. And was kind of surprised that it never really caught on at the time until there was this resurgence when Mighty Mighty Boss Tones are out. And you can, add Operation Ivy and Fishbone and Sublime and No Doubt for that matter. There was this big explosion of Americans suddenly appreciating just the fun of ska music. Was it just a matter of like good timing at that point? Or was there something else to that explosion?
I think timing had a ton to do with it, because that's from the two-tone movement, what Tim was doing with Operation Ivy out on the West Coast and Fishbone on the West Coast down in Los Angeles. Tim was up north and the Boss Tones on the East Coast. It was very inspired by what was going on in England. So, it came a few years after, but we were definitely, in those various areas, called ourselves Rude Boys and ska fans, and we had the huge love for it, and we were all very inspired. And also, you can talk about Orange County too, and bands like No Doubt, and the bands that were creating ska in that Southern California area that eventually became known as the third wave of ska. But when it blew up and exploded, kind of came on the tail end of grunge, when the pendulum had swung so far, and this it was very dark, and this is how we were feeling, and it was time for the pendulum to swing the other way and feel good again shortly after Kurt's death. And so we were just right place at the right time, and enter bands like the Boss Tones and Less Than Jake and Real Big Fish, and with some of us having been around longer than others. But it was the, like you said, timing. It was time. Green Day, in came Green Day, in came these bands that were, a lot more positive and a lot more, there was positive, definitely a more up feeling, more exciting sound.
I think the timing is completely right, because I think what people after grunge, what they really wanted is they want to have fun again. Because, grunge was great music, but it wasn't particularly a lot of laughs. It's like nobody was dancing to a lot of those songs. But with ska and you know, ska core and all these bands that were there popping up at the time. It's like, you know, people just, you know, they want to get back on their feet again.
It's the way it always works, though. You know, if things go too far right, they go back to the left. If it goes too far left, it goes back to the right. And if it goes, you know, if we're feeling too down, it's like, I want to feel good again. If things are too silly and uplifting, then things get more serious. So, you know, we were doing what we had always done, but all of a sudden it became popular for what we were doing. And it did shine light on what was going on, you know, how we were first influenced the two-tone movement. And the two-tone movement was influenced by the 50s Jamaican movement, the original, you know, the Scatolites or the
Desmond Decker, Prince Buster, stuff like that. Yeah. You know, one of the things that's I think is really pretty amazing, obviously you're with the Boston's for an awful long time, but your career has taken you in lots of different directions over the years. I mean, even to the point where I think you had a few stints in radio, which normally I wouldn't wish on anybody, but you had at least a little bit of experience with that. Tell me a little bit about how you kind of transitioned from the Boston's into other things, including radio.
I never, you know, I shouldn't have been anywhere. I should have been, you know, in Norwood tending bar and driving taxi. When someone said, hey, do you want to try this? Or, you know, I'd say, okay. I sort of Forrest Gumped my way through life and, you know, ended up places that I never imagined I should be. And then sort of try to blend in and hope nobody noticed I was there and enjoyed the ride. So, you know, the fact that I was in a touring band that had as much success as it did, and I can barely speak English, was phenomenal to me. And, the fact that I was on a television show for 20 years and then somebody said, hey, do you want to run a morning show, a radio morning show? And I said, well, what's the market? And they said, LA. And I said, oh, that's a pretty big market. And I said, well, why not? And I loved it. And for 2 years, I was on the radio in LA playing whatever I wanted to play. And then they said, well, you have to play these songs. And then I said, I don't want to play those songs. And they said, well, you can't be here anymore. And I said, ah, but I like being here. And they said, well, and then I tried to play those songs and then I couldn't play those songs. And then they said, Dickie, you got to go home. But, you know, I took none of it lightly. I was always thrilled that I was anywhere that anybody asked me to do anything and I wouldn't turn it down. And I said, yeah, sure.
How did the Kimmel thing start?
Same thing. It was Jimmy was a journeyman radio guy. He loved morning radio. He loved being on the radio. That was what he was doing. And he was in different markets. He was he was up Northern California. I think he was in Portland or Seattle for some time. And then he did radio in Florida. And he was like many morning radio guys, he was all over the map. And he ended up on K-Rock in Los Angeles. But I was in the Boston's and I would tour, you know, we would tour around and in the morning when we'd arrive in a city, the first thing I did is they woke me up and they took me to a local radio station and I'd go on the air and I'd try to sell tickets to the concert we were playing that night. And certain markets, you're, you know, the only game in town. So, you know, people were happy to have you on their morning show and I'd talk up the show and I'd talk up the Boston's and I'd try to be as interesting and as good a guest as I possibly could. And I met friends and people that were doing that for a living. And when Jimmy started, he was asked if he wanted to do a late night TV show. He said, yeah. And then he said, asked me, called me and said, do you want to be the announcer? And I said, that's crazy, but okay. And I expected it to last about 2 years. Cause at that time, everybody had a talk show. I think Chevy Chase, I think, Magic Johnson had a talk show. I think, you know, there was a long list, Dana Carvey, I think, of people trying to make a go of it. So in my head, I'm like, well, the guy from the Man Show, he's going to, and I was the announcer on that show for 20 years.
Yeah. So I know that, the way that ended and the way the Boston's broke up was unfortunate and it stemmed from a disagreement over vaccinations. I mean, obviously times are different now and in my own opinion, everyone's entitled to make their own choices and to live however they want to do without judgment. But the way that
everybody should make their own, you conspiracy nut? What's going on here?
No, I'm not a conspiracy nut. I just, you know, like, if someone makes a decision, that's their decision. It's not my decision.
Besides.
Yeah, right. I'm like Switzerland in a lot of ways. I don't want to commit to one thing or another.
Yeah. Two sides, you choose. So if you think people should have the freedom to make their own choice, then you're a racist.
Well, I'm gonna say that that's not what I am, but I understand that people can twist things politically in whatever direction they choose.
One side or the other.
Yeah.
I wanted nothing to do with that. I was asked and told by the TV show and the network are owned by Disney. And in the middle of the pandemic, Disney came up with a policy that all Disney employees must get a COVID shot. And I didn't want to. And so I said, no. And they said, well, what if we give you more money? And I still said, no, I don't want to. I don't believe in it. And it's not for me. And they said, we have to. And then I said, and then much like the radio station, they said, if you don't, you have to go home. And I said, okay, I'll go home.
Yeah.
So, and I was also involved with presidential candidate Robert F. Kennedy Jr. And he had called me when he found out that I was let go from the TV show, and he was very supportive, and it was a difficult time. And he said, you know, this is a free country and you have the freedom to make your own choices. And I admire what you did. And he asked me to create a song for him. And I did that. And we became, you know, close.
Yeah.
In that way, you know, so from that, there was members of the Mighty Mighty Bosstones weren't comfortable with my affiliation with him. And so they said, we're not interested in being involved in that. And I said, well, you don't have to be. And they said, yeah, but you are far too much. And then, so we decided to shelf that for a while. And that's when I called Greg and we started the Defiant.
It sounds, and you know, if I'm misunderstanding this, but you know, I apologize. It sounds like there's still maybe, you know, there's still maybe a potential open door down the road, or is that ship kind of sailed at this point?
You know, all doors, as far as I'm concerned, are open. I never closed any. I never wanted to, you know, discontinue anything. So sure, you know, we're still friends. I still talk to, you know, I talk to Jimmy. I talk to the guys in the Bosstones. So, you know, anything, that's just how I am and the kind of guy I am. I just was making decisions for myself and some people weren't into them at that time. It was a very, very, you know, divisive point in time. And it didn't mean I was supporting Trump. It didn't mean I was QAnon. It didn't mean I was a racist. It didn't mean I was a Nazi. I had definite opinions that, you know, have in a lot of instances, you know, bared true at this stage of the game. But, you know, but the main thing was everyone else was allowed to have their own opinions and to make their own decisions. So, you know, I didn't want to take that from anybody, but I also didn't want to, you know, do anything I didn't want to do. Yeah. If that sounds like I'm a big overgrown, spoiled baby brat, I'm fine with that.
See, now to me, I hear that and I'm thinking this is a guy who's keeping his eyes on the shepherd and not the sheep and making his own decisions and, you know, what he wants to do with his life. I got no problem with that. I don't know why anybody else does have a problem with that. To me, it's like a ridiculous argument that you have to do it, you know, this way if you're going to be a good American.
You sort of have to trace the thread and whose best interest is it, and who, you know, who is it lucrative for if we all do that?
Yeah.
You know, so that's sort of what I was saying. So it's like, you know, it's in the pharmaceutical companies' best interest if everybody signs on, takes that product, and you know, then we all move on, and some people are a lot richer. To me, it felt funny. It smelled bad. I didn't think that it, you know, it was possible to create something that was one size fits all and this will work for everybody. And so I passed on it. Now, yeah. Was I afraid of it? No, I've done much stupider things in my life, but I, you know, wanted to stand firm on what I believed, and I didn't want to signal that I was doing anything else, that I was doing anything different. I had my life by, you know, making choices that came from me, not came from, you know,
yeah,
if you want to, you know, go see this band, or if you want to eat in this restaurant, or if you want a free cheeseburger, here you go. So I wasn't ever gonna be part of that foolishness.
Yeah, I know. I don't have you for a whole lot longer, but I did want to ask
I know I'm making you uncomfortable. I'm so sorry.
No, you're not making me uncomfortable. I just know I got to get you out in a half, you know, in a few more minutes. But I just want to ask a little bit more about the Defiant. I mean, I know the album's been out for a few more months. I mean, are you planning going out on the road with this, or is it or what's next for you guys?
We're playing a festival in Brockton. We're playing with Me First and the Gimme Gimmes.
Yeah, you're playing Big Night Live on April 24th. And also in Burlington on the 21st of the Higher Ground in Vermont. That's cool.
Hey, will you come by?
I'd like to.
I'd love to have you. Text me and I'll put you on the guest list.
Well, if you ever wind up, you know, and God forbid why anyone from Boston would want to come out to Springfield, but if you're out in the Springfield area, let me know. And, you know, we'll love to have you in the studio sometime.
I'd love to be there.
Yeah. Hey, Dick, it's been a real pleasure. I'm so happy you had some time today. And like I said, the record is awesome. So thank you so much.
You are absolutely great at what you do. Thank you for all the compliments. It's been a pleasure talking to you. We grew up, you know, less than 5 miles from each other almost. And it was really nice talking to you. Text me later.
I will do. Thank you, Dickie.
Bye, buddy.
Bye. The new album by The Defiant is out now. Check out their website, thedefiantofficial.com, for more information. Thanks for listening. I hope you enjoyed it. Remember to subscribe, like, share, and rate it all over the place. Check out Instagram, TikTok, and Facebook for regular updates to find out what's coming up next. And also, you can email me at bax@rock102.com. I'd love to know what you think. Thanks to Metro Chrysler, Dodge, Jeep, and Ram, and Chicopee for their support. And thank you for listening to Baxy's Musical Podcast.